Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fly Brother Radio Show on the Industry Entertainment Network. I'm Ernest White II, storyteller and explorer and creator of the multicultural travel website flybrother.net. As part of my storytelling, I've had my travel writing published in places like Time Out Magazine, USA Today, Getaway Magazine, Panorama, Travel and Escape, Ebony, and at TravelChannel.com. I've lived in 5 countries and traveled to over 50, and I'm not saying all that to say that I'm all that. I just want to give you a little motivation, some inspiration, a few tricks and tips to go off and live an amazing fly life for yourself. Today on the Fly Brother Radio Show, I talk with Brandon Collier, American startup entrepreneur, strategic alliances professional, and overall cool brother living in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Working in the corporate sector for over 8 years, he established and managed critical partnerships throughout the Americas in industries such as engineering and construction, oil and gas, telecom, finance, retail, IT, government, and healthcare, before deciding to move to Brazil full-time and work for himself. Considering that the journey is the destination, Brandon is on a journey to continue cultivating his passion for music, gastronomy, travel, social and community action, and now disruptive innovation via his startup Entrusters. Today we talk all about studying, starting over, starting a business overseas, and a whole lot more. But before that, every week here on the Industry Entertainment Network, we highlight a community partner, either a small business, charity, or community service organization. This week we're highlighting Read USA. Read USA began as a voluntary project created by Ellen Wiss and teacher Vanessa Tussey at George Washington Carver Elementary School, a Title I school in Jacksonville, Florida. They successfully carried the project out with funds they raised from private donors and an additional volunteers they recruited from the Junior League of Jacksonville, Teach for America, Jacksonville Public Education Fund, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and several corporate sponsors. Their goal is to put books in the hands of every low-income child, introduce the love of reading and learning, and to end the cycle of poverty. To date, this organization has provided a $15 book allowance to every child in 6 Title I elementary Duval County schools. For more information or to donate to the cause, please go to www.readusainc.com and let them know that the Industry Entertainment Network sent you. We'll be right back with explorer and entrepreneur Brandon Collier on the Fly Brother Radio Show right after this.
Veja como é rico o nosso riso, o sol é feliz e sabe rir também. Água verde rindo, mares vindo, tudo é samba e o samba vem sambar, meu bem. Para ter amor um pouquinho de rio, onde a paixão é um riso de alguém. Vou te dar calor e um carinho de ritmo, todo meu amor com a natureza vem, vem. Tanta beleza. beleza se perder de vista. Cidade, floresta, meu cantinho, quintal. Faz 40 graus para esquentar a vida. Faz uma batida pra ficar legal. Laje é minha nave no alto do morro. Todo dia é dia de beijar o sal. Sambas na batida, projetos e rimas. Não tem fantasia, tudo é carnaval.
Brand ambassadors and business owners, the NEN has two questions for you. Are you ready to captivate thousands of new prospective clients, and are you ready to take your brand to the next level? If the answer is yes to both, then the Industry Entertainment Network is here to help you get there. Advertise with the NEN to give your brand the exposure that it needs on a national and international level to a diverse audience of substance and value. The Industry Entertainment Network is a global entertainment platform that highlights the positive aspects of music, film, culinary, lifestyle, and the beauty industries, with an emphasis on social and cultural issues. Our network features several evolutionary and elevating talk shows that are sure to appeal to your target audience at a fraction of the paid advertisement cost. Increase your business's and brand's value by taking advantage of our customer reach today. Contact us via email at www.welcometotheindustry@gmail.com or by calling 904-469-7511.
Have you ever wanted to just get away? To lie on a beach in Rio de Janeiro? To party at the freshest night spots in Paris? To explore the markets of Istanbul or the breathtaking landscapes of Cape Town? Well, every week you can find out how with the Fly Brother Radio Show. Hi, I'm Ernest White II, international explorer, storyteller, and host of the Fly Brother Radio Show, your audio getaway to exotic destinations, useful travel tips, engaging interviews, culture, history, music, and global exploration. I've lived in 5 countries and traveled to over 50 around the world, learning languages and customs, experiencing cultures and connections, and I'd like to share a bit of all of that with you. So tune in every week, Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, when we'll talk all about how to turn your life into a fly life. The Fly Brother Radio Show. Get lifted, only on the Industry Entertainment Network.
Welcome back to the Fly Brother Radio Show. I am here today with my brother, Brandon Collier, down live from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. My brother, thank you very, very much for coming on the show today.
Bom dia, bom dia. Thanks to you for having me. I'm really, really happy to be here on your show.
So, man, it seems like you have gone native with the Portuguese. How long did it take you? How long did it take you to learn?
Man, it is still a everyday struggle. I realize every day there's so much more I have to learn. And I think, honestly, that's what keeps attracting me to this place and to this culture. And I still, to this day, haven't officially taken a lesson, a Portuguese class, Portuguese lesson. It's all been, you know, conversing with friends, completely immersing myself in the culture and living here. You don't have a choice but to understand.
That's true.
Not going to eat. You're not going to function in society, you know. So I'll say my Portuguese is functional. I'm by no means fluent, as I'm reminded every day. But eventually, once I have the capacity in my schedule, I want to take an official course. And I think at that point, it'll all come to me, you know, flooding in, because you don't realize what you don't know.
Right.
What you do know, as I should say. Until someone tells you, and you're like, oh yeah, I know that, you know?
yeah, I do understand. from living in Brazil myself. And so did you have another language other than English when you went down there as a?
Yeah. Okay. So like you, and we've discussed this in our personal conversations, I partially grew up in Miami. My parents weren't together. So I grew up in DC. That's where my mom was. That's where I primarily lived during the summers. And then 1 year primary education, elementary school, I lived in Miami Shores in Miami. So that being said, there was no way I couldn't take Spanish as a class or learn Spanish. And then I continued that back in my education back up in, up north through middle school, through high school, even in college. So I wasn't fluent, but I spoke, again, probably functional Spanish. Mm-hmm. But once I got here and started learning Portuguese, I completely lost it because they're so similar.
Yes.
Confusing.
And you would think that adding Portuguese to your Spanish would be something that would grow, but actually it's like adding acid to
exactly. It's completely destructive, man.
Yeah.
Completely destructive. The vocabulary helps a great deal. Thank God for that. I think
that's
part
of
it. I learned so quickly and maybe didn't need to take an official Portuguese class, to at least be functional. But man, it's the nuances get you. You're like, all right, I just have to forget this altogether because I'll never properly learn Portuguese if I keep holding on to what I think I know in Spanish.
Right. Well, but you know what, man, it's nice that, you know, even if you're not perfect, I feel like Brazilians in general are very helpful when it comes to people speaking Portuguese. They love that folks at least try and they don't make you feel bad about making mistakes.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to derail the conversation. Again, we've had this conversation, too. It depends on where you are. You know, sometimes it's the blessing and the curse, because sometimes it's exactly what you just said within your friend groups and within your working environments and just with certain groups of people. Then you can be out in public or, you know, trying to order an acai or order a pão de queijo. You say it the wrong way and they look at you like you're a Martian, you know, because one syllable is off. So sometimes you can be in a context where they don't try to help you and it's incredibly frustrating. You're like, wait, I speak Portuguese. I know what I'm saying.
Oh, well, see, in that case, I ask them how good their English is. And when they don't say anything, you know,
you don't want to be that guy.
I don't, you know, I'm all for multiculturalism and multilingualism. Don't try to play me, though. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you're not going to come and be like, I'm ignorant because I missed a syllable when I'm trying to order my acai.
I'm in the supermarket with a box of cereal and I'm saying leche because, again, back to our Spanish conversation. So I'm saying leche.
You
know, leche in Portuguese. And they're like, what? The equivalent of what? Oi? Oi? I'm holding a box of cereal trying to pay for it. What else could I be asking you about? You know?
You know what? Bless them, bro. Like, that's all you can say is just bless
them. It's a laughable moment. And people, like you, as soon as I said it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I think it's a universal story that if you've been an expat and you've lived abroad and you're learning a different language, you've experienced this, you know?
True.
But back to the positivity, I think what you said primarily is overwhelmingly true.
Yes.
And really, really appreciate you and really are excited that you're taking the initiative to learn a language because as Americans, you know, our stigma is, you know, they don't try to learn anybody else's language. They go places and think everyone should, you know, inherently speak English.
Right.
So I definitely get that part of it. You know, it's a compliment to them that you're trying to learn the language and you respect it.
Certainly. And so then in your case, not having gone to a class, how do you add to your language? I mean, do you every day kind of add vocabulary words by looking at a dictionary? Do you use an app? Like, how do you listen to music and watch television? How do you help to grow your Portuguese actively?
All of the above. But I'm taking notes as you're talking because I do need to do more studying in terms of using apps. Like Duolingo, there are a couple of good ones out there. I have ADD, so keep me on track. You know this about me already. I was having a conversation with a friend. It may have been you. I don't remember. My memory is also gone. But about how YouTube is making, in some regards, you know, college or higher learning obsolete because there's so many things that you can just pop on YouTube and learn.
Right.
One of them being Portuguese, you know, language. So there are a couple of teachers that have series, you know, not just a few lessons. They have entire series that you can go on. I mean, there are podcasts. There are tons of resources that you can leverage to really become proficient in a language. So the practice is speaking to other people and being out in the context. You know?
Yes. Immersion, definitely.
Yes, exactly. But getting the basics and the foundation is critical. So that's something I can do on my own. That's something I will do.
Nice.
More studying. But, putting myself in different contexts. I think this applies to everything, not just language. Situational learning is how I best learn. So
okay.
I love music. I love food. I love travel. Those are the type of things that I think if I'm in that group, I'll be more inclined to understand what's going on and learn, you know, the Portuguese around those subject matters. Learn the language that way.
Well, I think it served you well, my man, because, you know, obviously you've gone into it with an open mind and an open heart, which are really all you need.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
It may take longer, or it may be more of like a Swiss cheese kind of compilation, you know, but again, like everybody learns differently. You know, I'm the type that I do benefit from going to a class simply because, you know, it suits my learning style. So it augments what I experience out in the field. I'm definitely kind of, I do enjoy having both classroom instruction and real world experience. But, you know, sometimes people just soak it up a bit better. And I've never felt like, whenever I've heard you speak Portuguese, you get around, you know, you're living the day to day in Rio de Janeiro. So, I mean, that says it all.
Yeah.
Now, how long have you been there, man?
I'm coming up on 4 years that I've been down here.
Wow.
Closer to five.
Okay.
Once we hit 2018, because I came in January 2013.
Okay.
But I was still employed with Oracle for another year and a half after I moved down here. So the position that I was in, I had a responsibility for global companies. So I was traveling all the time still. So I was back and forth between Brazil and United States. So I would maybe do 2 weeks in Brazil and then 2 weeks back in the U.S. for meetings, you know, that type of come and go for a period of about a year and a half.
Okay.
So I really can't count the first year as an entire year being in Brazil because I wasn't here, but only half the time.
Okay. Okay. So then tell me a little bit more about your professional background. So you grew up in both D.C. and a little bit in Miami. Where did you end up going to college and then, you know, take it from there? Connect us to Brazil from when you started school.
I got you. I'll bore the audience. I'll try to make it as exciting as possible.
Well, no, they need to hear how people end up where you end up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are many paths, and this is one of them. And I like for the audience to kind of be like, all right, I'm either already doing that now, or it's something that I might be able to do to get to, you know, to maybe a similar situation in my own life, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to go all the way back, to being nine months old.
I remember.
Now, of course I was told these stories, but, I've carried them with me, and I mean, it's a part of my story.
Okay.
So I think when I was either nine months to a year, my grandmother in Miami took me to the Bahamas. Now, I mean, you and I would snob that because of all the stamps that we have in our passport today. But for a 9 month old, a 9 month, baby, that's a pretty substantial, trip, I think.
Right.
So I got bit with the travel bug really, really, really early in my life. And then it was nurtured and it was, cultivated by my mother. She is the world traveler. And I learned many things in life, not just this, but, in this context, my love and my passion that I have for travel, there's a direct correlation to my mother.
Okay.
For that.
What kind of work did she do?
She has a sorted bag as well. She was, she had me very young and then she left, she was born in West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
As was I, actually. I was born there, but thank God she moved to D.C.
You know what? No shade on West Virginia. I'm sure we've got some wonderful audience members in the great state of West Virginia. Thank you for listening, West Virginia.
Love y'all. I still have many, many family members and cousins there, so I'm just glad. Because I don't be having this conversation had I stayed there. That's just real.
Yeah, you're right, man.
Look what's happening on the news.
True.
But that's another interview for another day.
Right, right.
So... But so she left West Virginia, and she actually became an FBI, started working for the FBI.
Nice, nice.
And then she did law school in Howard. She ended up going into finance. She worked on Capitol Hill for the Democratic Budget Committee.
Okay.
She has a very, very mixed bag. And now she is management at Lockheed finance.
Okay.
In the finance division. So, so she...
She moved on up.
She moved on up, thank God, my inspiration.
Mm.
But so anyway, back to travel. So I definitely got that from her. When I was in middle school, there was an opportunity presented, and I went to a performing arts middle school. So
okay.
It wasn't, it was a magnet school, but it wasn't like a, it wasn't a private school. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't some, for lack of a better explanation, it wasn't some bougie school, you know, that just, you would assume that the kids would be, you know, summer vacationing in Greece or something.
Mm-hmm.
But an opportunity did come along where students were afforded the option to go on a class trip to Paris and to London. And I'm 13 years old, you know, 13 to 14 in middle school. And there are adults, grown people that don't even have a passport, you know, much less have been out of the country. So I was able, my mom made a way, and I, you know, asked family members for donations to make sure that I got to go on that trip. And that, I think that was also a turning point for me. And I knew then that whatever I did, wherever I was, I wanted to experience the world, and I wanted to be able to travel and see different cultures and to take my culture to other places in the world. Something that remained very important to me.
Right.
So that's a big milestone, I would say, in my development. So on to college, growing up in D.C. and the suburbs of D.C. and Prince George's County in Maryland, I went to Philadelphia for college. I went to Drexel University for undergrad.
Okay.
And they have a co-op program, which is why I went there. So the curriculum is 6 months of class, 6 months of on-the-job learning. So you do a co-op. I hesitate to call it an internship because an internship is – maybe, you know, 4 or 5 weeks during the summer while you're, you know, home from college.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 6 month cooperative learning experience that I really think is essential. And it really helped me when I graduated because I had a resume comparable to that of somebody that's, you know, graduated and been working for a couple of years.
Wow. Okay.
You know, as opposed to just having.
Just the coursework, right?
Yeah, just coursework.
Yeah.
Again, just the 4 to 5 weeks over the summer. It's a really a differentiator. So in those positions,
okay.
I got to travel a bit as well. I worked for Comcast. I worked for Unisys. I worked for Drexel's HR, Human Resources and Information Systems Division.
Okay.
And then after my 6 months was up, all of those positions I actually ended up keeping. They kept me on to work part time while I was completing my coursework.
Nice.
School.
So, nice.
Yeah, it was a really, really good experience for me. And more travel came through that. So I was a college student on business trips. It was amazing. So again, the bug was it bit me through my college experience.
And so you seem to have been a very serious student, though. I mean, did you go on trip to like spring break trip to Daytona? I heard you laugh.
Yeah.
I said you seemed to be.
Yeah.
Right, on paper.
My transcript may not reflect such, no. I was a good student.
Okay.
I was a good student.
But, I mean, you didn't go to Daytona on the, you know,
man,
for it. Like, I mean.
I never did, but that wasn't, I mean, that was on me and the program that I chose because it depends on your cycle. If you, for me, and I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but I had a fall-winter cycle for co-op. So if I was on co-op for 6 months during the fall and winter, that means I was in class during the spring and summer.
Okay. But also, and I'm sorry for interrupting, but I also feel like it spoke to your decision to kind of, you know, do programs and activities that were part of the bigger picture. You know?
Right. Exactly.
Was that intentional? Do you feel
yeah.
like you chose these things intentionally? You're like, you know what? I know y'all going to have a good time, fellas, you know, going down to Freaknik or whatever, but I got an internship lined up.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, everyone, I'm also in a fraternity. I'm a brother of Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity
okay.
Incorporated. So a lot of my chapter brothers either were in the same programs. My chapter was a big mix. It's a citywide chapter, but we were predominantly University of Pennsylvania and Drexel University
okay.
In Villanova. Those during my time in the chapter, that those were the schools that made up our chapter. So everyone understood. Everyone knows the deal with our program. And
there was a seriousness about everything.
Yeah. If it was a choice between going to turn up for a couple of days or make this money and make these power moves so that I'm successful, this is an Ivy League and upper tier institutions.
Right.
You know,
right.
People understood, people are there about their business. So, I didn't feel like I lost out. You know what I mean? Sometimes,
right.
Sometimes I think when I immediately after people get back from the trip and you see the pictures on Facebook, you're like, man, you know,
right. Maybe I should've. But then when you look at the fact that you're living in Brazil now,
I think I'm more than made up for it.
Right. So, and again, yeah. This isn't saying one is right over the other. It's just exactly. Pointing out kind of the necessity of deferred gratification, I feel like, sometimes.
Precisely. I mean, that's something you typically learn a lot later in life.
Right.
For it to be someone younger and have that foresight, I think, is, again, another indication of people that have this experience or have this exposure, how our thinking is different, you know?
Yes.
Even at that stage.
Right.
So to close this out, so I don't...
You're good.
I don't want your users to start, or your listeners to start yawning. After undergrad, I started working for a company called Primavera, which is a project management company. They were based right outside of Philadelphia. Worked for them. I had a regional position there, and that involved regional travel. Canada, which I guess you consider international. I did a lot of business in Canada, and that was awesome, even though their culture is very similar to American culture.
But where in Canada were you?
Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver.
Okay, the three crown jewels of Canada.
Yeah,
and Montreal is a phenomenal place that people don't even know about. Toronto, too.
City, yeah. Amazing city, man. I, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a huge, huge music fan. I love jazz. I used to convene. Thank God I had a lot of autonomy over my schedule. And my boss trusted me a great deal. So I could say, you know, I have a client or I have a partner in Montreal that I need to meet. And it just so happens that it happens to be around Montreal Jazz Fest.
Right.
So I, for a good 3 years, I was there every year for Montreal Jazz Fest. And I saw Dave Brubeck, a jazz legend.
Live.
Live. And he was 91.
Wow. 91 and 91. Still on stage.
Did a complete set by himself. It was phenomenal. It was the last concert I think he gave before he passed away.
Mm.
So it was an amazing experience. Another opportunity that travel has afforded me.
Right.
So anyway, I did that. Then that company ended up being acquired by Oracle. And so once we became Oracle, our particular product, which is why they purchased us, they wanted us for the intellectual property. Oracle was a huge global corporation, so they're no shortage of people. But people that know the product they were purchasing and that could, you know, deliver the message and evangelize it across
different
territories and different business lines is what they needed. So thank God my team, which was the team that was responsible for managing our partnerships, were kept on after the acquisition. And so with that acquisition, I was given a responsibility of what they call channel development, partner development, alliances development, pick any one of those terms. And my job was to do what I just explained, go out into the field, evangelize this product to potential partners that can take our product to their customer base and thereby extend the footprint of the Oracle Primavera product.
Okay.
And so in that, my territory was all the Americas. So I had from Iceland all the way down to the tip of Antarctica. That was my territory. And wherever I saw fit, you know, based on data, based on user potential, based on need, based on existing Oracle customer. I mean, it was a whole gamut of data to look at and figure out where we could add partners and extend our reach and add customers. That was where I went. So during this time, Brazil, it was, and I still argue still is, an emerging market in many capacities.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, I spent a great deal of my time in Brazil. Geographically, Brazil is larger than the United States without Alaska.
Correct.
So
yes.
A huge, huge territory. And I think our business line maybe had one or two partners for the entire country. Ludicrous. It's billions of dollars.
Wow.
You know, sitting here waiting to be spent. And they allowed me to be here to develop a plan that would help them access some of that revenue.
All right, man.
Here, Argentina, Colombia, Chile, the Caribbean, all for business. It was the best 3.5 years of my life. but even doing all that traveling, I fell in love with Brazil. And
as one does.
As one does, and more specifically Rio. And you know how I knew? It's more than the superficial meanings that people give you about why they love Rio. Because, as you know, flying into Galeão, I love many things about Rio. The airport is not one of them.
No.
It is the most...
it's unattractive, my brother.
Terrible international airport I think I've ever been to for a city this beautiful. But on the plane, my first time here, I went to Sao Paulo first because that's where the majority of my business was.
Okay, then that's my city. But
yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, bro.
But landing in Rio on the plane, before I even stepped foot off the plane, there was something about this place that I felt internally that I still to this day can't articulate. And I love it here. And this is where I'm supposed to be.
Man, on that note, we are going to take a quick break, but... goosebumps, because I know what it's like to really resonate and connect with a place. It's like when you meet an attractive person, you know,
yeah.
It's just really, it's exciting and you're just like, wow, it's unexpected.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
All right, man. Audience, please stay tuned. Thank you, my brother. We'll be right back after this short break.
Chef Elliott's Entertaining Solutions.
Fans and foodies alike, the moment we've all been waiting for is here. Celebrity Chef Elliott's Entertaining Solutions radio show is in full swing. Tune into the most alluring and entertaining food talk show with Food Network star Chef Elliott Farmer. Join the conversation to get exclusive food event details and gain an all-access pass to interviews with foodies and renowned chefs from around the world. Remember to stock your pantry, pack your fridge, and get your notepads ready for the tips and meal magic happening in the kitchen on Chef Elliott's Entertaining Solutions. Listen live every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the NEN. Welcome to an exploration into the discoveries of independent talent on the Industry Radio Show. In this space, your Out of This World super hosts, Zakiya Yuwanda and Nicole Lester, will continue to shed light on extraordinary artists while confronting issues that impact our community, locally, and abroad. You are especially invited to tune in to the weekly conversation, meet our phenomenal guests, and learn about the happenings that are landing on our radar. The Refuel Industry Radio Show is live every Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to taking off with you here on the NEN.
In the wake of tragedy, a phoenix rises to restore hope needed by many to mobilize and effect the change they seek. In preparation for change in our communities, the Real Talk with Anita Spencer radio show reflects the expertise of author, entrepreneur, culture curator, and community educator Anita Spencer. Her life's experiences and purpose both lead her to awaken, empower, uplift, and strengthen families around the globe. Tune into her show weekly to have your spirit elevated, your mind broadened, and receive the inspiration to build yourself and others up. Listen to Engage in Real Talk to get real solutions to real issues that affect our communities. Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. only on the NEN.
We won't land, y'all.
Come on. Walk right up to the sun, hand in hand.
Hand in hand, every man.
Walk right up to the sun,
every woman.
Welcome back to the Fly Brother Radio Show. Ernest White II here with my boy Brandon Collier, entrepreneur, explorer, phenomenal brother. And again, thank you for coming on the show today and just sharing with us your experiences and being down in Brazil. It's one of the world's most interesting and amazing countries. So again, appreciate you on the show, man.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you again for the invite.
No doubt, man. So you ended up in Brazil and you were working for Oracle and eventually you started your own business. So kind of take us from how you were working for someone else to how you started working for yourself.
So, yeah, I actually left Oracle in 2014. I had been there 8 years.
Okay.
And just saw that it was time for me to leave the proverbial glass ceiling that many people see in corporate America. You feel stifled. You feel like your creativity won't really grow. You have to subscribe to a certain agenda. And I mean, I had a lot of autonomy in my position, and things changed. So it was time for me to go.
Okay. And, yes. You would know that. Like you would feel it.
And I definitely felt it.
Right. And people ignore that, I feel like, too much. Yeah. When you get that feeling that it's time to make that move, then jump, folks.
Yeah. Yeah, easier said than done. And I don't think either one of us are suggesting it is. It's not. And for what I'm getting ready to say next, we'll drive home that point.
Okay.
So I left, again, after being there 8 years. So I had a little bit of severance. I had a little bit of, you know, wiggle room to kind of take a sabbatical, which a lot of people aren't afforded to do. So I took I planned a 6-month sabbatical, to of course, what do you think I'm going to do? Travel a little bit. Rio is still my base. I still had an address there. All my life was here. But I went to Europe. I went to Portugal. Having lived here, I needed to definitely see the foundation, and be able to see some of the roots of a lot of the culture that is here in Brazil.
Right.
That was phenomenal. I went to Italy. I'd never been to Italy before. And I also went to Spain. I'd never been there before. So I took the opportunity to do some more traveling, which was an incredible opportunity. Well, when I came back to Brazil, unfortunately, when I left Oracle was when the economic bubble, the economic boom that had been happening in Brazil, due to the World Cup, due to the Olympics, it burst right around that time. So being a gringo abroad, one would think you would have a extreme advantage and really have a competitive advantage in this market. And I found that not to be true. You know, I had
a
very, very hard and humbling lesson. I had what I consider to be a pretty solid resume. You know, again, going back to my undergraduate experience, you know, after I graduated, and before I left Oracle, I started completed an executive education program at Wharton, with a trajectory into the MBA at Wharton, executive MBA at Wharton. So this is on my resume. And
and you're still not eating.
As well as 8 years with a global multi-billion-dollar corporation, and I'm not able to find work, you know, for over a year. You know, was over a year that I was unemployed. Looking for work here, and even back home, you know, it depresses me. It depressed me then, and it depresses me now to think about that. Now, for reasons other than just leaving Rio, given the current climate back in the U.S. at this point, but
right. Now, did you have a work visa that allowed you to stay?
No, that was another problem. So I have a work visa, a Visto Deutsch, which is a visa that allows you to be abroad to conduct business on behalf of an American entity.
Okay.
But it's not a work permit.
To get a job with someplace, another company, for example.
Exactly.
You cannot do that, right?
Exactly, here in Brazil. So opportunities for me would be like the ones I already had. You know, people, American entities that want to have a presence in Brazil or that need to do business in Brazil.
Right.
So looking for opportunities everywhere, quite frankly, and just not coming up with anything. And so thankfully, I have a good friend of mine who was working for Uber. He was launching Uber here in Brazil. And he was approached by a company called Entrusters to launch the business here in Brazil. And of course, he's already with Uber. So he said that he couldn't take the opportunity. He turned it down. But he did recommend a friend of his, which would be me. And so Entrusters approached me and outlined, you know, the business model. It's a peer-to-peer shopping platform or sharing a part of the sharing economy, like Uber is, like Airbnb is. You have a personal resource and you offer it as a service
for
money.
Okay.
So in this case, what you're using is your suitcase when you travel as a resource, and you're allowing your unused suitcase space to be used by someone who needs an item wherever you're traveling.
Right. Now, why in Brazil would that be such a big moneymaker?
It's huge. So that whole year that I told you that I was unemployed, I had to sustain myself somehow, right?
Right.
So once my family got tired of me calling and asking for money, and my friends got tired of me calling and asking for money, and my fraternity brothers got tired of me calling and asking for money, I had to augment my loss of income. You know, my savings had run out. I hadn't been successful in finding another job. There were no other options. So I was actually already informally doing their business model. And I think we all do. If you're a traveler, you have friends abroad, you do this.
Right. You bring things down for people. Yes.
Unquestionably.
But what's the thing about the Brazilian market that necessitates bringing things down?
Like, so in particular, things here, and I can't really speak to many other places in the world that I haven't lived, but
right,
here,
right.
There are items that I know for a fact are 50, sometimes 100% cheaper.
Wow.
No, things aren't free, but no, at least 50% cheaper than the price that's advertised for the same exact item here in Brazil.
Now, is it because things are made abroad and then usually imported to Brazil? Is there like a really high tax that people have to pay on items abroad? Okay.
Exactly. So I think there are regulatory taxes that are imposed on certain items. There are certain regulatory taxes that are imposed on businesses for them to be able to bring their item here if it's not manufactured within the country, which they then pass on to the consumer. It's terrible.
Right.
So I use the example of an iPhone 7. So this this is a multifaceted issue. So not only is the iPhone available whenever the new one is released in New York or Japan or other countries 6 months before it's available in Brazil sometimes. So people always want to be they always want to be the first to have the new and high item, right?
Right.
No matter
right.
Where you are.
Certainly.
And that's a universal human trademark, mm-hmm. characteristic rather. We all want to be the first with it. We all want to be the only one with it. So to have an iPhone, this business is really, really valuable because they can be the first person in Brazil to have this phone,
right.
Without having to book a plane ticket or, asking someone to bring it for them. And a lot of people, quite frankly, don't have a network of people that travel that they can just hit up and say, oh, you're going to New York, you're going to Miami, can you bring me something back when you come?
Right,
A lot of people don't have access to that type of network.
Okay.
A lot of people don't have the resources to travel themselves. It's just not in their budget, in addition to buying the item that they want, Additionally, there are economic factors. In Brazil, there are people that are still off the grid, so to speak. There are people that don't have bank accounts. There are people that,
there's a high poverty level still.
There's a high poverty level, but there's still a high, even higher level of consumer spending, for goods. So there's a market there, and we aim to capitalize on that market. So let me backtrack a little bit. So they approached me about taking the job and launching the business here, in Brazil specifically. So they had already launched a business, in Argentina.
Okay.
And they did that going again back to the Apple reference because there's not to this day an Apple store in Argentina.
Okay.
It's a very, very restrictive market. They don't allow many outside vendors. I think there may be, and don't quote me on this, but maybe 2 to 5 outside vendors across the entire country that are able to sell their goods there.
So
at stores,
Now, and this is because this is supposedly to foster domestic industry in certain countries, on paper, anyway.
Industry. Exactly.
Right, because apparently the expectation is there'd be an Argentinian or a Brazilian version of the iPhone that could be produced.
Right, if people invested in the local economy.
Right.
Yeah, that's the argument. So they have a new president. His ideology is a bit different, so it should be changing soon.
Okay.
But when they launched the Trusters initially, it was literally directly in response to that demand. There's no way. I don't think they have Mac authorized retailers, or service providers. It's just very difficult. They do have service providers. I take that back. But authorized retailers to sell the products at a normal price, even inflated for taxes, is it can't be found. So the only option that they have literally is to go to another country to buy it or have someone bring it to them there.
Okay.
In a perfect niche for this type of business.
All right.
So Brazil, again, being an emerging market, being another place that, although they have Apple stores, the phone is maybe 50% of a higher cost than it would be if you bought it in the U.S. or another another location,
mm-hmm.
Had it brought to Brazil. So so that's one way to look at it. Then there's just the variety of products that are available. New parents, they have babies, and the product, the quality of products that they have, baby products that they have here. I'm not a parent yet, so I don't know. But what I've been told by my friends that have recently had children and have children, the quality of goods that they can get here is just not up to snuff of what they want to give to their child.
Okay.
So they look to retailers in the U.S. And other places to buy their items. These are extreme examples. But then it could just be peanut butter. You know, peanut butter is 30 reais for a little jar at the supermarket,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
when it costs us $3, you know, even with the exchange rate,
right.
That's an exorbitant yes. amount of money to pay for a condiment, you know? So
Right. When you're earning 500 reais a month, right?
A month, exactly. It's not possible. I play American football here. The sport is growing and it's really exciting to see, but it's not widely accepted. It's not widely supported yet, you know? So where am I going to get a helmet? Where am I going to get pads? Where am I going to get football?
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't exist here. So the only way is if you order it through a service like ours, or if you pay a higher price to a Brazilian, you know, sports store that's happened to import it here.
Right, like it's specialized.
Yeah, it's going to be exorbitant. So we are offering people a way to get the items that they want and get them at a fair price.
Okay, so then, I mean, that's exciting. How does one participate in this scheme, if you will?
I'd rather not call it a scheme.
I'm using my British definition of scheme, but in this process, shall we say, it is legal. So that's,
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you said that, because that was my first question when they approached me. And anybody's question, like, is this legal? Or am I essentially just smuggling goods? you really are smuggling goods, but I mean more in a comedic sense. It's completely legal. We attribute taxes to items that are taxable.
Mm-hmm.
As a traveler, you're allowed to bring a certain value of items without being taxed.
Okay.
And if the item you're bringing exceeds that amount, then we collect the tax from the shopper here in Brazil. And then the traveler is also, should they have to pay tax on the item, they're also reimbursed directly by entrusters. So there's no risk. There's nothing illegal about the operation.
Okay.
We're just standardizing the operation. We think of ourselves as a community. We are a community of shoppers and also a community of travelers.
Mm-hmm.
So you can join our community by looking at www.entrusters.com. That's E-N-T-R-U-S-T-E-R-S. .com. You can also look us up on Facebook at entrustersbrazil.com.
Okay, nice.
Facebook.com/entrustersbrazil.
All right, and I'll make sure that folks get those links again in the last portion of the show. And
let me interject once.
Sure.
Quick second. Sorry. So we talked about one side of the business. We talked about shoppers. The value for the traveler is that you're earning money. So the difference from bringing something for your friend or bringing something for somebody you know as a favor. With this model, if you sign up as a traveler, you earn money by bringing the item.
You
log onto the platform, you'll register your trip, you'll see the items that have been selected by a shopper. You'll see the attributed reward that you get for bringing that item. For instance, I'll stick with the iPhone reference because that's a very popular item. It's very small and easy to bring.
Right.
It's easy. So for an iPhone 7, you can make $130 U.S. dollars for bringing a little tiny box in your suitcase and making someone's day, you know?
Our
good slogan is make someone's day when you're already heading that way, you know?
It's okay.
It rhymes. Yeah, it rhymes. And I wish, my God, so you guys sat through my boring biography. Could you imagine how much money I would have been making traveling for Oracle and traveling for any business? You know, I'm already getting paid. I'm on a company down conducting that business. And then I'm able to bring items and also augment or supplement my income with additional income.
Right.
Every time I travel. And I was traveling 70% of the time. You know?
Wow.
Man, I wish a company like this existed when I was doing all the traveling.
Right. Okay, so then the process would require the traveler to purchase the item on the front end.
That's correct. Yeah, so that you do have to have the ability to purchase an item. But
okay, that's key.
You can rest assured that whenever, yeah, that's key. Trusters will never ask you to purchase an item before we have the money from the shopper. So Trusters collects the money from the shopper, and we hold it in an escrow, so to speak. So that way,
exactly,
you're not buying an item that, you know, the question is always, well, how do I know I'm not going to travel 5,000 miles to Brazil, and the guy's like, never mind. You know, I don't want the item anymore. It can't happen because we won't have you purchase an item until we have the money from the shopper.
Right.
And once the traveler is accepted to bring the item, the shopper cannot cancel the order.
Okay. So that's a good thing because it protects both the traveler and the shopper.
Exactly. And I mean, we have some higher priced items, that people just will never be comfortable with purchasing unless they're, you know, an avid or expert user of our platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that. So we are able to make certain provisions for certain items. So the best thing to do is to join the community, get in touch with me directly, and we'll help you make your trip profitable.
Nice. That's you know what, folks love to make money not doing much. And so this is a good way to do that, right?
Easiest money, like legal money that you can make.
Certainly. Easy peasy. And legal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some of the more interesting things that people have brought down?
Oh, man. So it's crazy. So I'll immediately go to the sports reference. Shout out to Flamengo Futebol Americano.
You Flamengo.
Flamengo Imperadores.
Talk that talk, boy.
Meu time do coração, rubro negro, uma vez Flamengo, sempre Flamengo. So my football team, they've been very supportive, and I had a number of my teammates use the service to order every item that we mentioned.
Okay.
Cleats, helmets, pads, gloves, football gloves, mouthpieces,
okay,
anything you can think of that just is not sold here. There's no other way they can get it. So they've supported me, and they've made purchases. We've had travelers come and make money bringing those items, and it's not an issue of paying a cheaper price. It's a matter of them paying a price to get something that's not accessible in their country.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
So
they're willing to pay a little bit more, obviously, or they're willing to pay a little bit more than what they would if it were available at a much higher price, but also they're willing to pay more for something that they know otherwise they wouldn't even be able to get.
Exactly. It depends on the shopper. Like, I mean, sometimes you just get people that want it. I mean, if you're running a business, so I'll move on from that example. There's a huge concert called Rock in Rio that they do every year here. And it's, I mean, lined with artists. One year it was Alicia Keys and Jay-Z and Beyonce and Justin Timberlake and Metallica. And I mean, man, they have the biggest, best stars for a week-long series of concerts.
Nice.
Different people.
Stevie Wonder went there one time, a few times actually, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. John Legend was here. It's amazing. It's the best thing.
I'm old shouting out to Stevie Wonder. I don't care.
Stevie Wonder is a legend. Man.
Exactly.
You have to give respect to Stevie. I have a friend of mine, but he's a business owner. He's converted a Combi, which is like a VW van.
Yes.
He's converted that into a mobile photo booth. So he's won a contract with Rock in Rio to have his his photo booth on site at the concert. And he has an extensive need for equipment to offer this service. So he needs iPads to take pictures. He needs props. He needs accessories for those iPads to execute his business model. And so are those products available in Brazil? Yes, but at the 50% markup that I was telling you about before.
Right.
So it's much more cost effective for him to use a service like ours to have the items brought from the U.S. And also specifically some of the accessories that he's ordering just aren't available here in this market and won't get here in time for his deadline for the concert.
Mm-hmm.
So he's using our service to fill his business requirement, his business contract with Rock in Rio. So we're important in many regards. And then you also just have shoppers that just want what they want, you know?
Like, right,
I want the iPhone 8 when it comes out. I don't care how much it costs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So our type of shopper runs the gamut.
Nice, yeah. Man. Well, you know, it's exciting. I'm glad things are going well for you down there in Brazil. Man, thank you again for coming on the show, and entrusters.com when folks want to find out more information. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And if there are any investors or VCs or angel investors that find this interesting, please get in contact with me. We are always looking to have partners come on
right,
and help
right.
us expand our brand. We do eventually want to grow beyond Brazil and Argentina, but of course we need investment in order to be able to scale the business. So.
Very true. Very true. Every man, when you do anything, even creatively, but when you're moving into business fundraising and getting to know how to attract folks who are willing to invest is a key skill.
Absolutely.
I'm learning that the hard way. So,
all, right.
all right, man. Muito obrigado. Foi muito bom hoje falar com você. That's my little messy Portuguese that I'm
beleza.
Saying.
Isso ainda lembra, né?
Tô tentando, cara. Tô tentando.
Aí ainda lembra.
All right, man. Well, thanks again, brother. And folks, please stay tuned. We'll be right back right after this.
Obrigado. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Fly Brother Radio Show. As Brandon mentioned before the break, you can find out more about Entrusters at Entrusters.com. That's Entrusters.com. If you missed any portion of the Fly Brother Radio Show or would like to experience this session again, please log on to www.blogtalkradio.com/welcometotheindustry, that's industry without the I, to listen to the on-demand version of the show. You can email me directly at ernest@flybrother.net, and please like the Fly Brother Facebook page at facebook.com/flybrotherfly. Please share any questions, content, or stories that helps me help others thrive. Listeners, please join us here next and every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern. That's GMT-4 for our international listeners. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Fly Brother here on the Industry Entertainment Network. Have a phenomenal weekend and an amazing week. Ciao, ciao.